Is there really such a thing as a safe place to put your money? And where would that be? Under the mattress? Stuffed in a cookie jar? No, no, no. You want real safety? Find out about the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC. It protects your money, up to $250,000 in bank accounts like checking, savings, and CDs. And talk about solid. In 75 years, no one has ever lost a penny of FDIC-insured money. Better odds than your cookie jar. So if you have $250,000 or less in any one FDIC-insured bank, you have no need to worry. Your money is fully protected. If you have more or aren't sure, visit FDIC.gov or call 1-877-ASK-FDIC. The more you know, the safer your money.
Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And this month, my special guest is Cindy Gray. She's a handwriting analyst. She is a Hatha yoga teacher and author. And I just want to say thank you for doing the show and thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you're welcome. How are you today?
I'm really good.
Good.
The weather's been beautiful.
Yes, it has. Now, first of all, we want to touch on handwriting and how you analyze that.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been doing that?
25 to 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of time, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. A few decades.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
How'd you get interested in that?
Well, initially I was waitressing in a restaurant in Livonia a long time ago when I was just out of high school. And a gentleman I waited on was a handwriting analyst. I didn't know it. And after he finished his meal, he said, I'm going to give you this paper and pen. I want you to, you know, if you want, sign your signature and your list. I think he said, write the sentence, I said this, I said that, was the exact sentence he said. And so I did. And he proceeded to tell me a whole lot of personal, fascinating information about myself. And it startled me, because plus I was just a kid, you know, really. And so I never forgot it. And then, I don't know, a year or two maybe, I was at a party, and there was a person there, another man, a different man, who was doing handwriting analysis. And I thought, oh, there's that thing again. So I gave him my sample. Again, I got a different analysis, but also very accurate. And I was fascinated by it. And then a few years later, when my daughter, who's almost 30 now, she was just a couple years old, and we'd walked over to the library near our house in Livonia, and I went to the Dewey Decimal card system, if you recall the you know, index cards, and I found a book I was looking for, and I went over to the shelves to get that book, and there, misshelved, was a book on handwriting analysis. And it was called You Are What You Write by Huntington Hartford. It was an old book, old hardback book. And I thought, I think the universe is trying to tell me I need to check this out. So I started reading it, and I immediately felt comfortable with it. And I, you know, in the back there was recommended reading and so forth, and I started getting other books on it. And it just, one thing led to another, and it just became a part of my life.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of snowballed after a while. Huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's interesting, because that has happened to several of my guests. Sometimes they're along a certain path, and then out of the blue, something that seems very, you know, simple just happens to them, and it's like, you know, they have that moment where they really realize that that's something that they should pursue. So you're
right.
Saying that's what happened to you.
Keeps surfacing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely.
So you think that, okay, well, this is definitely talking to me. I've got to follow it up, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I actually went to a lecture in Berkeley, I think it was, the Metaphysical Society, years and years ago. And I was with a friend of mine, and there was a gentleman there doing like spontaneous readings of people that were in the audience. And he came to me and he said, I see you with a feather pen. And like an antique, old-fashioned feather pen. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. He says, you will change people's lives through ink. And I thought, what is he talking about? And lo and behold, I think it was handwriting analysis. I'm mm-hmm. quite certain at mm-hmm. this point. Yeah.
Now, do you feel you have changed people's lives with what you've told them?
I think so, in many ways. I know I've helped a lot of people mm-hmm. Get greater understandings of themselves through their handwriting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, when they provide a sample of their handwriting, do you try to tell them that, okay, maybe you should go into this area as far as a career, something like that? Can you divine that type of information from their handwriting sample?
What it is if I see a trait or get a particular feeling from the writing that might lean toward, for instance, like I do a lot of high school senior parties. Mm-hmm. They have those now in the last decade or more for kids, and I've done a lot of those. And, for instance, a kid will do their sample, and to me it looks like the sample of handwriting of a person that would be or could be an engineer, yet they've had no engineering training. Or drafting, for instance, like an A. Often engineers or drafters will make a pyramid-shaped A. There's just certain traits. They're usually very vertical writers. They're very linear. And when you say to someone, your handwriting looks like the handwriting of an engineer, and they've always dreamt someday they would do that, but have had no schooling on it, it's really inspiring for them. Other things are sometimes people have different healing abilities. Nurses, people that are in nurturing sort of capacities, and quite often that will show in handwriting. So for a perfect stranger to look at their handwriting sample and say, you've got the traits of a person that would probably be in the healing arts, it can be, again, inspiring and validating to what they may be dreaming of doing.
Mm-hmm. So it might be mm-hmm. their secret passion, but they really haven't pursued that up to that
right.
point, and it's like, wow, maybe yeah. they should, you know, look into that.
Mm-hmm. And it can be encouraging,
right.
too.
Right,
right. Recent example, a couple years ago, I was at a, you know, the Lions Club? Well, mm-hmm. the women right. are the lionesses. And I was at a function a couple years ago where it was the lionesses convention. And a gal gave me her handwriting. And there's a lot of information that an analyst can get to do with a person's family background and to do with their parental upbringing, whether it's, you know, biological parents, adoptive parents, whatever, whoever your parents were, shows up through the handwriting, can show up through some samples. And with hers, I felt that one of her parents had been missing from her life, whether physically, emotionally, in whatever way. And quite often, I don't get a lot of specific information. I'll get something like that generally. And usually, if it's an accurate statement, the person that provides the sample really can resonate and really feel connected to that information beyond what I can even comprehend, because I'm just going with my training and with my gut. So she said to me, she said, my father's been gone a long time. And I said, okay, you know. And she says, but he had recently passed away. So I think he wasn't in her life for a long time then, plus he physically died. And I said to her, I said, there's a lot of suffering in your handwriting that feels that there's such unfinished business because of this, probably for you and probably for him. And I said, if he comes to you in your dreams, you may want to invite a healing. You may want to invite him into your dreams if he's not coming in there. And if he is coming in there, try to communicate with him to put some closure on some of these issues. So anyway, just last weekend, I was at one of their conventions up in Traverse City. And she took me aside. She said, I want you to know, you really changed my life 2 years ago. And I said, well, what are you talking about? She said, well, remember when you did my handwriting? I said, well, I did a lot of people's handwriting, but I said, I remember something to do with yours. Yeah, and she said, She said after that, she really meditated and prayed on the concept of inviting her deceased father spiritually into her life, into the sleep state specifically. And she said he came to her in her dreams because of that. And she said that they had kind of a reconciliation because of it. And she said that in the waking state, it helped her really feel that there was love after death, not only maybe life after death, but love after death, and that her father's love was still out there in the universe, and that she reconnected. And she said it gave her a lot of faith in her existing theology or belief system. It reinforced a lot of spiritual gusto in her life. And she thanked me for that. And I said, well, you're very welcome. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So she felt she had achieved closure?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And didn't feel that emptiness that she felt relative to her father for so long.
Right. Well, that's got to be good that you helped somebody, I guess, resolve some problems. I mean, that makes you feel good,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not just a fun thing to do.
Right.
It can have some serious ramifications.
Right.
And speaking of that, it's important for anyone who does any sort of subjective science type involvement, because handwriting analysis is a subjective science. You're subject to the knowledge of the person that's doing the reading, basically. But other people that do, for instance, tarot readings and all sorts of different types of readings, if you will, you've got to be careful what you say to people, because you might just say a certain thing to them, and you may have 20 people come to you. But that's just one thing for them. It's one-on-one for them. And so when they walk off, they're going to remember what you said. And it's important to plant positive seeds. Very important. And particularly, certain people are more vulnerable than others. At the high school senior parties, you know, when you're dealing with teenagers that are about to go into the real world, if you will, out of high school, it's very important to plant positive seeds. I've had students come up to me, and I'll do their handwriting, and they'll say, that reader over there, you know, for whatever type of method that person may have been using, they scared me. They said I was going to be in a car accident or something, you know. And I may see something similar or feel something possibly in handwriting, but my way of saying that would be, your handwriting looks like you write really fast. Maybe you drive really fast, too, and perhaps you might want to slow down. Maybe you might need to be a little bit more cautious in how you get through life and just slow down a little bit. You know, there's a positive way to say everything, even if it's got a negative undertone. It's a positive way to say it. And so I try to be careful with the way I phrase things.
Right. Well, sometimes I believe when seers get some kind of impression, it might not be that person. It might be something that, you know, another driver will cut them off or cause the accident or whatever. So in that respect, that might be why they would say something like that. I'm not saying that that's right or wrong, but,
right.
You know, that might be their take on it. But that, I guess, leads me to my next question, in that you do these readings, and do you use a certain type of psychic ability? You say you listen to your gut as well as actually looking at the, you know, writing and the printing or whatever it might be to get a literal translation, but you also have certain impressions or feelings on what you're receiving when you look at their samples of handwriting?
Yes, I do. There could be some handwriting analysts or graphologists or whatever that may feel that they don't bring any intuition at all to what they do, and that may be fine for them. I like to think that I use my intuition in everything that I do. And you know how the stereotype person goes to a reading, and their stereotypical reading, and they give them their grandpa's watch, you know, and the person holds grandpa's watch, and they get these vibes, and they share the vibes. That would be considered their psychometric tool, would be holding whatever object that the person provides. Handwriting analysis, the ink is my grandpa's watch, if you will. The handwriting on the page brings with it energy from the person. And most of the time, I do get strong intuitive feelings from that handwriting sample. Beyond the schooled left slant, rightward slant, writing small, writing large, you know, the traditional modes of using it. Yeah, I get a lot of intuition on it. And it can be, too, the person that you're getting the handwriting sample from, quite often they could be very open to being read or they could be very closed to it. So it depends on how much that window's open on the part of the person given the sample.
Mm-hmm. So. And just real briefly, I want to remind everybody that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. The name of this program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. This month, my special guest is Cindy Gray. She's a handwriting analyst, hatha yoga teacher, and author. And now, when you do the readings, what do you look for? I mean, do you have certain things that just jump out at you initially, or do you just take your time and read the whole thing first before you reach any conclusions?
That's a good question. Depends. It can fluctuate. When I go about what I do, I like to give a person a completely blank sheet of paper with no lines for them to follow. I like for them to use a medium point pen. That way, if they don't have a lot of pressure in their pen and their penmanship, it'll lighten up. Or if they are press real hard, it'll darken up. Some people can make a fine point out of a medium point or a more bolder point out of the same pen. So that's what I tend to use. I give them a set of directions, whether it's printed or verbal, and I tell them that I'd like for them to give me at least 3 to 5, even 10, samples of their signature. And I always let them know, like a person named Catherine can have a formal signature, Catherine Smith, but she can also have a casual signature, Kathy Smith, Don, Donald, same theory. So show me both. Both styles. Some people also have a favorite initial, the way they like to sign their initials, and show me that. And then I ask them to either write in cursive or printing, whatever the way they like to write, and I give them a set of sentences to use. Because sometimes people will say, without guidance, they'll just start telling me all about themselves in their sample. And it's like, I want to tell you about yourself, so let me just give you some, the quick brown fox jumped over the moon or whatever, one of those type of sentences, or a favorite poem, maybe too. But even a favorite poem can be indicative of certain personality traits. So I like to give them real generic sentences, and then they write that, and sometimes they use more than one page. And so I look at that, and any handwriting analyst looks at the blank sheet of paper that the sample is on as the canvas. And the writer is the artist, and they're basically painting the picture of their personality through their handwriting. And I look to see where they don't write, too, which is interesting. You look at the margins and how much is framed in white space on there. I even like to turn the page upside down and see what it looks like upside down, mm-hmm. which a lot of times confuses people. But, it just gives me the feeling of the flow.
Right.
And I look to see whether they have a rightward slant, leftward slant, vertical, a mixed slant. You look at how easily they can flow across that vacant page, because remember, there's no lines on these pages. So I look to how the handwriting flows or doesn't flow across the page. I also look at the personal pronoun I, the capital I that refers to I of the self, and I measure basically the height of the personal pronoun I with the height of the first letters of their signature, too. And what it is, it's kind of like it's like an ego balancer. And the signature is fascinating because that is the person's ID. That's their identification. That's what's on your driver's license. That's what makes things legal when you sign things. So the signature is often representative of how the writer wants the world to see them. But the personal pronoun I is how they see themselves. So I like to weigh out the differences between those two to see if they're in concert with each other. And sometimes a person might have a real strong appearing signature. It might be large. It might be powerful looking. Then they have these little dinky personal pronoun eyes. So that tells me they work hard to have that image of being confident, that deep down they see themselves smaller than what that signature would imply.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting, too, you mentioned that you actually look at the white space, too. I mean, how it's printed out on the page. I'm sure you know what the margins are, things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Yeah.
What does that kind of tell you?
It tells me where they position themselves in the world. It tells me whether they have a certain level of poise. It can be also a person's level of how they present themselves. a person that has very, very little space and they take up the whole page. I always say you wouldn't want to travel cross country with that person because they're going to take up the whole car, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And nonstop talkers too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they also tend to have a lot of clutter.
Mm-hmm.
Their houses are cluttered. Their vehicles cluttered. Their handwriting's cluttered.
Mm-hmm.
I look to see if there's connections between the letters, or if they're disconnected, or a combination. Most people are combination. I look to see if the loops, for instance, the lower zone loops of like a Y or a G, how it drops down, if it tangles with the ink of the next line. Because if the lines, if the ink tangles, it represents a person whose mind is somewhat tangled. There's usually got too much going on in their head, and it could be just from stress, it could be from too much caffeine, it could be from drugs of some sort, pharmaceuticals or what have you. Sometimes real high energy people, all their lines are real tangled.
Mm-hmm.
And they can come across very stressed out. So that leads me to tell you there's a theory called graphotherapy, where if you change your handwriting on purpose, it can lead to changes in the personality, desired changes in the personality. For instance, I recently have been wanting to write with a fine point, and I'm usually a medium point kind of person. I always like medium points. And
as opposed to a broad point?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Or
I just want to clarify that.
Or a fine point, even. Right. I never really liked fine points before. I felt like I was writing with a needle almost. It was scratchy.
Mm-hmm.
And so recently, in the last couple of years, I've been trying to write with a fine point more. I've actually gone out and bought them, brought them in the house, and keeping my purse and so forth, and I've been using a fine point because it slows me down, and I want it to slow me down.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try to slow your handwriting down, you're going to slow your breathing down. You're going to slow your pulse rate, your blood pressure. Everything is going to balance out. And maybe in the converse, I suppose, if someone feels like they're very slow to begin with, maybe they're going to want to write faster. But yeah, you can change aspects of your personality by changing your handwriting.
Mm-hmm. So if there's something that you're not happy with as far as your personality is concerned, you want
mm-hmm.
to be more outgoing, you
yes.
could actually practice your handwriting so that you would become more outgoing?
You bet.
Now, how long does that usually take? I mean, does that depend on the person? Or
yeah.
So there's no set time, like it might be 3 months or 6 months
right.
or
not
what?
Not that I know of, although that's a really good question. I don't know. I don't know. I do think that it would be the amount of energy the person would put into that endeavor would
mm-hmm.
have a lot to do with it, and how consistent they were
mm-hmm.
with it.
Right. Now, do you suggest to people what they have to do or how they have to start writing in order
sure.
to achieve some of the things they want to change?
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be just the size of the letter, the slant, a
yes.
lot of different things, right?
Yes.
Virtually anything about their writing,
mm-hmm.
you could change that and that would change
mm-hmm.
them.
One example would be how they cross their T's. The T in itself is a vertical column type stroke. And if the cross of the T, which is the horizontal line going left to right, if that's in the center of that T stem, of the vertical stem, that's a real nice placement. That's a real balanced, moderate, in the middle of the road placement. Some people cross really, really low. They're down into the middle zone of the writing. They're down into where the T even starts to leave the middle area and come up. Placement of T-bars, placement of I-dots, too, can represent a person's goals. And the higher up on the stem, the T-bar or the I-dot, the higher the goals. Now, as with everything, there's a good moderation is great. If the T-bar is always way up high, even off the stem, those are people that usually their goals are just out of sight almost. They're not real realistic. And so those people, I would say bring that T-bar down to get back on that stem. Or in the converse, the person whose T-bar is really, really low, bring it up some and bring it up to the center. And envision when you're doing it too, consciously, that you want to have your goals be more reachable, you know, and that you can reach those goals. And that's one example.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you tell something if a person just prints primarily, or does it have to be actual handwriting, cursive handwriting?
Yeah. Yes and no. Some people that request samples will say, if you tend to write in printed fashion, then show me how you write, and then also write such and such a sentence in cursive. Some people are uncomfortable writing in cursive. Mm-hmm. I find that younger people today, I sound old when I say that, but it's true.
it happens to the best of us, you know.
beats the alternative.
That's right.
But a lot of young people today print. Cursive is kind of seeming to fade, but penmanship isn't taught in school like it mm-hmm. used to be a long time ago. And printed expression reflects like a book. It looks like typeset. And a lot of kids today, younger people today, are very, very comfortable with the look from a TV, or not TV, like a computer screen. And they're more comfortable with something printed. Mm-hmm. And that's how they tend to write.
Right. Well, I know, speaking for myself, I have a tendency to print for the most part, and that's because in high school I was taking drafting classes and got used to printing and enjoyed doing that. So if I were going to give you a sample of writing, would you prefer me to give you just the, you know, regular print as opposed mm-hmm. to cursive, or would you still ask for both?
It'd be nice to have both just for the heck of it and just to really delve into it, but I think there's more important information coming from you through something spontaneously written, mm-hmm. something that's comfortably written from the writer.
Right.
So
you can tell a lot. I mean, you can tell if somebody's perhaps not feeling well, or you said they're on drugs, or they might be, I don't know, can you really tell if they're a liar, or if they have a tendency to lie or cheat or anything like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of graphological traits and features that represent all those various things, good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, again, you don't really want that person to probably write about themselves. That's why you just ask for
yes.
generic sentences.
Exactly.
And gives you a sample of every letter mm-hmm. that, you know, in the alphabet, so that you get an idea. If they start telling you about yourself, I know, according to some of the information on your website, you don't want that. You don't want people telling them about yourself, because you feel, as a graphologist or analyst, that you should be telling them what they're all about.
Yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a case a few years back, where it was a nursing home, actually, and they had an employee area that was locker rooms and so forth for people's personal goods, and someone was stealing from the purses of the women that worked there. And I got a call to see if I could help them with this circumstance. So what I did is I said, you know, I want these sheets of paper, these pens, and this is what I want people to write. And you give everyone that works at this place the same task. And on the sheet of paper, it said, you know, the generic type of sentences that I use. I'm going down the street to get the green car from the purple garage and what have you. A few of those, a couple oddball sentences. And then in the middle of the sentences that were the samples, I had something like, I don't know anything about the theft going on in this building, and I had nothing to do with it. And that's not verbatim, is pretty much what I said. And then some more meaningless sentences after that. So what I did is I sandwiched the meat of that, if you will, in between those generic sentences. So everybody was doing this. Everyone put in their samples and wrote their thing. And I was waiting to see, because usually when someone's writing something and it's not true, that handwriting is going to have a different energy than all the other handwriting around it. And it was very, very clear which one did that. And once that person submitted the handwriting, they didn't even wait. They quit. They quit after that, because they knew that they were going to be. And that was the person whose handwriting sample it was, because it was like it fell apart in the middle. And I remember the shapes were completely different than similar letters of the previous sentences and the following sentences, because they knew that they were caught, and they knew what they were writing wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
So it was clearly, it was easy to see.
Right. And you say that it's writing from your mind, so it's your subconscious or whatever is going to give you away somehow.
Exactly. That's why they call it brain writing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's examples over the years of people, for instance, that would lose a hand or whatever, and use the opposite hand to write, or maybe they lost both hands and they'd use their mouth to hold the pen. Some people that don't have hands will use their foot to hold the pen, or even to paint. They'll use that, or they'll hold the pen in the crook of their arm, too, whether it be armpit or the elbow pit, if you will. And unless the personality changes, pretty much most of the traits should remain the same and consistent with them before the injury or accident, unless the personality changes. Because what it is, it's your mind is basically what's coming out. It just happens to come out through the pen, you know, and come out onto the paper. And that's why it's brain writing.
Mm-hmm. Once again, I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'll get it out. There you go. Metaphysically Speaking, yes. And I'm Mike Holloway. My guest this month is Cindy Gray. She is a handwriting analyst, Hatha Yoga teacher, and author. Now, have you worked with business at all? I mean, have they come to you and perhaps they're looking for a certain person to, I guess, get a certain job or take a certain position, and they come to you and they want to get a sample of that person's handwriting, and then you analyze it to see if that person would be the right person for that job?
Mm-hmm. I don't per se, because I'm not licensed to do that. You can be a certified handwriting analyst. You can be a document analyst. You can be a forgery specialist too. And I have never pursued formal qualifications like that. I've taken courses years ago in the past, and I had a knack for it, and I just kind of did my own thing. There are people that do that. I haven't done that. I've done a little bit here and there. I've done a couple forgery things where people would say, you know, I've checked in the forgery. A specialist is like $500 an hour to even talk to me, but you know, I have this issue. What do you think? And I would look at that and say, or yeah, I'd invest in that. If you need something that's going to be admissible in a court, you know, you're going to want someone who's certified to provide that. But I haven't pursued that. I was a court reporter for almost 15 mm-hmm. years, and I often thought, I don't want to be in any position where I'm back in a courtroom. Yeah. I don't want to be on that side of the bench.
Right. So you don't want to be testifying in a court of law that this person might be a counterfeiter or whatever.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And although it would be fascinating to pursue that, I just haven't. But there's document authenticators. And like, say, for instance, you're at an estate sale and you see a old document that was allegedly the handwriting of, like, say, Abe Lincoln or whatever. A person who's schooled in that would be able to take that document and check the, first of all, the handwriting, obviously, of compare that handwriting to the handwriting that's been proven to be Lincoln's or whomever. And they would also, though, know what sort of paper was produced in that era. They'd know what type of ink was made, and over time, products change. And so they would know what should have been made at that time. So there's a whole lot more that goes into that, mm-hmm. you know, than just the simple handwriting. But that would be a document authenticator. But there's forensic handwriting analysts that deal with suicide notes, kidnapping notes, things like that. There's a lot of applications for handwriting analysis. And yes, many countries use handwriting analysis for employee screening, because, you know, you don't want to put a shy person in a sales position where they have to go out and talk to a bunch of people, or you don't want to put an extrovert who really wants to be out there in a room by themselves to do a job. You won't get the most out of that employee, and mm-hmm. they won't probably flourish as an individual in that capacity either. So you can use handwriting for a lot of things. What I like to tell people, and I feel that I offer some help in this regard, is to observe your children's handwritings and your grandchildren, if you have grandkids, and take a sample from their schoolwork, maybe every couple weeks, put a date on it, pop a three-ring, you know, put in a three-ring binder, and over the months and years, you should be able to see a visual history of the growth of that child, academically, socially, emotionally, in every capacity. And then, two, if you have that history, and then they begin to have problems in some way, then you should be able to see it in the handwriting. I can't tell you how many times people have said to me, I knew that my mom or my husband or my dad or whomever was not well when their handwriting started to change. And people may not have studied handwriting analysis, but it's something everyone has. Everyone has a form of expression through ink. And everyone usually has a signature as well. So a lot of people have said that. I knew something wasn't right because their handwriting changed.
Mm-hmm. Or they might have known that this person was, I don't know, maybe some kind of a criminal, and maybe you could detect that, or he had those kind of traits, he or she had mm-hmm. those kind of traits.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Right. You can look at a person's sample and look at that and think, ooh, oh, geez, something's not right there. You don't have to be an expert to know something just doesn't quite feel right. Or you may get a sample that's almost like calligraphy. It's overly embellished. And it may, at first case, look like a Hallmark card or something, you know, or some other type of professionally produced printing. And yet you look at that and think, but that doesn't seem normal. It doesn't seem comfortable that a person would write like that. And I've seen samples like that, and you think, it's orchestrated. Mm-hmm. It's hiding something. It doesn't feel like the rhythm and the flow, the heartbeat of the handwriting, which I've always felt the handwriting has its own pulse almost. It doesn't seem to be beating in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
I did have a recent sample that came to me that I think you might be interested in. There was a young guy in his 30s, I guess, from Canada that was on my website, and he saw my page on handwriting analysis, and he emailed me, and he said, I want to send you a sample, and let's call her Anne, okay? And I'm going to send you a sample of Anne's handwriting. And I said, okay, and then next email I get, he sends it in a PDF, right? And I said, no, I want to hold her handwriting, you know? And he said, oh, okay, and my directions do say that. You have to mail it to me. I could have looked at it on the PDF, but it wouldn't be near the depth of what I would get from the actual holding that metaphoric grandpa's watch, if you will, like we talked about. So he mailed it to my P.O. box, and I knew that it was female. I knew her name, and I knew she was right-handed and her age. She was 36. So I had this sample, and I just didn't like it. I thought, oh, something's kind of creepy about this girl's handwriting, and I thought, oh, geez. It puts you in a spot, you know, if it's something odd. So I emailed him back. I said, is she going to be privy to this analysis? First of all, I want to know. And he said, yes, she is, but go ahead and do whatever, say whatever you want. No holes barred. I said, okay. So I did my thing, and it's the sort of thing, too, sometimes you have to be in a mood. I don't know if you do anything creative. Certainly, you're probably a creative sort of person. Some days you're more on than others. So I sat down one day, and I thought, I really feel good. I'm just going to do this. And as I touched it and held it and really looked at the different features of her handwriting, it felt to me that she did not have air around her. I felt myself inhibited breathing. My own breath felt inhibited when I was doing her analysis. So part of what I said was, is this person needs more air, first of all, in a positive slant, needs to get outside more, might enjoy more of a clearing of their head, if you will, if they were able to get fresh air and get outside. And I said it just felt to me like her freedom was being squished, contained, repressed, whatever. And so I did my thing, and several pages of analysis. I sent it to him. I emailed it to him because he wanted it that way, and I mailed back the original sample. And I got an email once he received it, and he said, you've blown my mind. He says, not only are you right on, but I want you to know she's incarcerated. She's in prison, and that's why she needs to get air. That's why she isn't breathing, if you will, metaphorically speaking. And then it all made sense to me. And that's when I have to be reminded, too, to trust my own instinct, trust my own inner guide that was saying, well, I don't know why I'm feeling this off this handwriting, but I definitely felt it. And sure enough, she was in a box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, hard to breathe in a box.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, I have a friend that writes with their right hand, but their writing slants off to the left as opposed to most people slant a little bit to the right. What would that show?
They're right-handed, but their handwriting slants to the left.
Yes.
Signature and script as well?
Yes.
Well, in personality, we've got introverts, which are people that kind of go within themselves before they go to other people, if you will. They're usually considered more shy, less outgoing, less confident possibly. Then you've got your rightward slant people. And those people are usually more out there. They tend to kind of, like if they have a problem, for instance, they easily share it with people they trust or what have you, or maybe even others that don't really want to hear it, but they want to share it with everybody. The introverted people really don't share as quickly. They often process more inside before they share it with whomever. Then you've got the ambiverts. So you've got your introverts, your extroverts, and your ambiverts. And ambi, A-M-B-I, like ambidextrous. Ambi's Greek for both, actually. It means both. And so that person that you're referring to, particularly because the signature and the slant both go to the left, would be more of a shyer person. It's hard to define. It's hard to put it into words. They may be the sort that likes to observe things before they delve into it. They may not necessarily be horribly shy, but they just aren't out there as quickly as the people whose handwriting is more out to the right. Because in this hemisphere, if you will, we write from left to right. We start at the left side, which in graphology is the point of origin. It's also the maternal representation. It's the mom on the left. It's where you came from. You write and you write and you write and you lean toward the right. That's toward the father image and it's toward your goals. It's where you're going. So the left-hand side of the page and the leftward slant is more of where you came from and the rightward slant is where you're going. So the person with those traits leaning to the left are usually people that are a little bit more cautious. They may observe things before they get involved. They may be more careful, more methodical, maybe even more logical. And a lot of it depends on the size. So with that example, I'd want to know if their personal pronoun I is of a similar size to their signature, and even if their signature is of a similar size to their sample, to their script. The important thing with that is that the signature and the script match, because there's a lot of people, their signature is to the right and their handwriting's to the left. So what that would tell a handwriting analyst is the signature's to the right because they want the world to really see them out there. But deep down, they're sticking to the left because it's safer. And that's where their true personality's more introverted.
Mm-hmm. Now, we do have someone that donated a sample of their writing anonymously, of course. We don't want to mention any names. But by looking at that handwriting and the samples of writing, signature, et cetera, what can you tell us about this person?
Well, I've got a sample here. It's a young man, right-handed, possibly 20s to 30s in that age bracket, I guess. I've never met him before. So the signature is basically illegible. The script is very legible, and it's very print-like, but it's also got some areas where it's connected. So it's kind of like his version of cursive, if you will. And because of his age, I would assume he's been taught more printed expression versus cursive. But the signature is definitely in cursive. First of all, I would want to say that the signature is illegible, but the script isn't. So he's able to communicate, but it's on his terms. The script is vertical, meaning it doesn't slant from left to right, but the signature has a rightward slant. So he's probably a little more shy and withdrawn than maybe his exterior wants people to think. He may be real cautious on new people and getting to know them first before his true self can be comfortably shared. And then two, his signature ends with what we call threading, and the ink just kind of goes out in a straight line at the very end of the last letter of the last word of his signature, his last name. It's called threading, and it's often a person who's a good negotiator, a person who doesn't like to argue, doesn't like a lot of conflict. And if you were to envision that was his body, if you will, it's almost like that's his hand and it's reaching out to the right. It's movement oriented. He's mm-hmm. probably a planner, a more of a futuristic thinker. He doesn't probably dwell a lot in the past, and it reaches out toward other people. So even though it's somewhat of an illegible signature, pretty much, he does have that shape to it. So that tells me that he is willing to reach out to help people. Hopefully throughout his life he won't get burned when he does that, because that can really deter a person's trust in people. His script is on this sheet of paper with no lines, is straight across, and it's straight across throughout the whole sample. What I like to do is I like to look at the top of the sample, I like to look at the bottom of the sample, and then I like to look in the middle, because the middle's the guts of it all. A lot of people will start out neat, and then they get comfortable, the real them comes out, and then at the very end they tidy things up. So the real person is usually in the middle, and it's kind of cushioned between the safety net of the beginning and the end. And so with that, it tells me that he's very, very balanced in many ways emotionally. It's straight across. He's the sort of person you can probably count on. because there's a reliability to the handwriting. Also, too, a lot of his letters to me look like number nines. He's got a lot of nines in his handwriting. The word going is clearly a nine right there. G-O-I-N-G. So he's got nines all over the place. Even his S's are shaped like nines. He's got figure eight in many ways, too. We call these figure eight G's. So he's probably a very creative person. It seems to be... the pressure's pretty strong. I would say he's probably self-critical and that he's got certain creative tendencies and desires and innate abilities, but he's got to let that come out. And sometimes it can be because some people in your life, and usually parents or whoever's bringing you up, tells you, oh, no, you don't want to do that. Oh, no, that's not the greatest idea. Or that sounds good, but no, that's not very practical. So he may have been taught that a lot of his creative ideas aren't as worthy as what he'd like them to be considered. So I would urge him to really pursue his creative stuff and not worry about what he may be criticized for. He's also got some really funky eye dots, and they're not just dots. There's lines more, if you will. So it would tell me that he's got a good sense of humor, probably somewhat sarcastic, and a dry sense of humor, so people might not quite get it. But there's a good sense of humor under there if they'd listen. So he's also got quite a bit of space between the placement of words and a lot of space between the placement of letters. Mm-hmm. So he needs a lot of space around him. He doesn't like, although he doesn't have a lot of margins on either side, he can fill up that space, but then he's got he's kind of got a mixed personality. He might be difficult to read in a relationship with him. He might really, really want the relationship to be healthy and strong and firm, but then he's got all this space in here. So he may have moods where, just leave me alone. So it might be hard for his partner to read that. So he might be moody in that regard. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, I noticed that it's basically the same sentence or the same words over and over and over again. Uh-huh. And it's only a few sentences. So you don't need a huge example to right. tell you what that person is about, correct?
Right, yeah. And the more the merrier, certainly. What's really cool is when people have a sample that they bring to me, for instance, from a diary, although a lot of times you got to watch that because there can be personal information in there that you might not want to see. But if you have more handwriting that's written without it being written for me, then a lot of their personality was really in there at that moment. That's why it's cool to keep a visual history. And even myself, I'll come across, because I'm a writer, so I've got notes. Oh, writers are crazy. We have notes. We have stuff on napkins and Post-its and cardboard, anything we can write on to capture an idea. We got to capture it while it's there. So I see my own handwriting, and I think, yeah, it's pretty consistent from even 30 years ago, you know. So
you really haven't changed all that much over time.
Right, yeah.
It's interesting. It's interesting, all the little things that, you know, you can divine just looking at that. I mean, the fact that some of the letters look like numbers, things like that. I mean, you can, I guess, see a lot of different things in so many different forms of writing that does it ever get you to the point where you feel just totally crazy or something? I mean, that it's just overwhelming. There are so many things coming at you that you're looking at when you're examining somebody's handwriting.
Well, I know personally I like to be well rested when I do writings or when I do handwriting analysis. It's hard to be stressed out and to feel overwhelmed to begin with and then get somewhere and have the handwriting. Yeah, but I don't get too overwhelmed by it at all. I know when I do like the high school senior parties, and I may do 50 to 100 kids in a few hours, and you know, they say handwriting analysis, there's no two handwritings that are the same, like a snowflake. But I'll tell you, some of these kids, their handwriting starts to really look the same.
Right,
especially
after a while.
Yeah, and it's all stick-like. It's all vertical, all straight up and down and all stick-like. So I would encourage people to really encourage their kids, their grandkids, or whomever to write. You know, you get a handwritten thank you note in the mail, and it'll blow your mind nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost a dying art, if you will. But, and that's of concern because so much emotion is expressed through your handwriting. So if you're not handwriting, where's that emotion going to go?
Right.
It's needed as an outlet.
Right. And once again, very briefly, I just want to mention that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Cindy Gray, and we're talking primarily about handwriting, and you also teach yoga, and you're an author. I know you have a book. What is your book about?
My book is called The Spirit of Health, Mind to Toe Self-Care for Women. I finished it a few years back. I'm ready to relaunch it. I'm not sure if I'm going to revise it first or how I'm going to go about that. It's been called an encyclopedia of natural health and spirituality, and I felt very complimented when that person said that. It was very nice. The premise is that there's seven essential elements to optimal health for any human being. First one being air, and they're in order of hierarchy, if you will. So it's air, it's water, nourishment, sleep, movement, cleanliness, and peace. And you pretty much can't have one without the other. With what I do, I feel that in terms of the trinity, what I call it, the body, mind, spirit trinity, the body is what I do with my yoga. The mind is what I do with handwriting analysis. And then the spirit is the work that I do with dreams. I'm a dream interpreter. I do presentations about dreams and so forth. And I think that it's kind of like my book is like a bridge of information between those realms, if you will. So, yeah, I need to relaunch my book. I'm working on that.
So you've had it published once, but you're going to have it published, published again?
I self-published it.
Okay.
I printed 700 copies, and it took me a long time to write it. It's 469 pages, including an index. And it's very thoroughly and well-written, I like to think, and I've been told. And I sold them so fast that they were just gone. And I really didn't have the financial means to make it all happen again. And, I mean, I seriously sold like 690 of them within a couple months. And this was without an agent, without a distributor or anything. And I had, like, sometimes I would do a book signing for 2 days, a Saturday and a Sunday, and I had people come back the next day and buy several copies as gifts for people. I had some people say I shouldn't call it mind-to-toe self-care for women, that I was kind of limiting it that way. But my vision at the time and for this book was for women, although a lot, most of the information applies to both genders, you know. So I do want to relaunch it. And I think that, you know, I've been told I'm an Aquarian, and I've been told and read that most Aquarians are ahead of their time. And I was told a long time ago the book was ahead of its time. So I think now it might just be the right time.
But still, I mean, that's a great sign, the fact that it sold out in a short period of time. I mean, that obviously gives you some incentive to put the book out again, right?
Yes, definitely.
So you're in a position now where you can publish many more copies and hopefully sell those as well?
Well, that or perhaps have an agent represent me and sell it to a publishing house. I'm not quite sure how it's going to unfold. But I'm confident that it will unfold. I would like to offer more copies to be sold on my website. A few years ago, I had a yoga student say to me, "Hey, I saw your book on the internet," and I said, "You did? Where? You know? Oh yeah, I'm going to buy it on Amazon." I thought, "Oh great, someone's selling my book. What's the deal?"
Yeah.
Well, people sell used books.
Right.
And at first, I was really taken aback by that and upset by it. But then I thought, "Now wait a minute, it's still circulating."
Right.
It's out there, and it's continuing to be read and continuing to be desired. So I kind of just let that go with that. So it's available all over the internet, you know.
Right.
So
right. Whoever's supposed to have that book is supposed to have it. I mean, whether it's used or whatever, you know. Again, it's keeping it in circulation. That's the important thing.
Yeah, and I've thought about too breaking it into smaller segments and having it be several smaller books,
because
there's a lot in it, so it could be more and more bite-size version, if you will. So
are you planning any more books?
Yes, I have a lot of books that I've started, couple nonfiction, couple fiction, couple children's stories that I've written. A lot of writers have all sorts of things in their talent closet, if you will. So, and it's time to make a lot of that happen for myself.
So you're going more into the writing mode?
Yeah. And I've been writing for Body, Mind, Spirit Guide, and been pleased to have them asked me to write a yoga article each month for them, so that's good. And I do write for a health products company in Arizona that I write for, but it's more marketing, or not marketing, it's more text for supplements and different things like that, and newsletters, health newsletters. So, but I'm more interested personally in writing fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, how can somebody get in touch with you if they're interested in getting their handwriting analyzed or contacting you about yoga or speaking or anything like that?
Well, my website is www.cindygray, and that's CindyGray.biz, B-I-Z like zebra. So it's www.cindygray.biz. The phone number is 734-266-2734, and my web email address is info@cindygray.biz. So they're more than welcome to contact me through that. And my website's pretty thorough in explaining what I do. And I love to do presentations to people. I can do presentations regarding what we've done tonight, the handwriting, also dream interpretation, which is what I did up in Traverse City this past weekend, which was a lot of fun. Everybody has dreams and everybody has handwriting, you know.
Right, yes.
So it's kind of a universal thing. And I like to do presentations for groups, nonprofit groups, church groups. I do a lot of things voluntarily, too, and pro bono, if you will. So.
Well, you do a yoga television show as well, right?
Yes, I do, and that's through Farmington Hills in Novi. It's SWOCK Studios, SWOCK. It's Southwest Oakland Cable Commission, and it's Channel 12. And what it is I've produced my show, and I have my own disc. So any other public access TV station in the United States could air my show if they wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's being shown in Athens, Ohio right now, too.
Oh, okay.
Because they contacted me and said, we want to run your show. I said, cool. So I sent them the discs.
Yeah, it's nice to make contacts like that.
Yeah, well, it's what it's all about is circulation.
Right. Now, if somebody wanted to get their handwriting analyzed, how much would that cost, basically?
Well, it depends on how long the analysis, how long they want it. Normally, it's $25 to $50, and that's two- or three-page analysis. It's single space. It's not big margins, and they mail me a check or money order, or they can do it PayPal, you know, through my website. But they mail me the sample and so forth, and then I can email them back, like in a Word document or a PDF, but then I like to also mail them, I always mail them back the sample, and usually then the printed analysis as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, people mail me their handwriting all the time.
Yeah, so you hear from people all over the country?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And out west, too, because I lived in Arizona for a few years, too.
Right.
Out in northern Arizona.
Right. Anybody from foreign countries, anything like that? Now, can
well,
you do
Canada.
Foreign? Well, Canada, but you couldn't do, like, somebody wrote something in Italian or German. Could you decipher that necessarily?
Well, I wouldn't be able to technically read what it said, but the shapes would be, the same theory would apply to the shapes. Matter of fact, it's neat that you said that. I had a young man years ago show me his handwriting, and he was Arabic. And he would write from left to right in English, and he would drop down and write in Arabic from right to left, and then drop down and write in English. And it was going all across the page like that. It was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you can analyze doodles. A lot of the same traits that are used for handwriting purposes can be applied to doodles and drawings.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if people just draw houses or whatever, you can divine some information about that? I mean, something
more,
like that.
Well, more doodles. But, yeah, well, even like, for instance, Claude Monet, who's an impressionist, you know. He's got his water lilies and so forth. But when you look at the signature on that artwork, his signature looks like his art. It looks like it's almost stenciled. Salvador Dali's signature looks a lot like his art. Really wild.
Mm-hmm.
People's inner drives and their own passions come out through their art and also in their handwriting and their doodles through their drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And like my husband, he's from England, and his handwriting has an accent. You know, I can look at a person's handwriting and usually tell if they were schooled in this country or another country.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often, maybe not know what country, but I can just tell that somehow they're an import, you know, and the handwriting to me looks like it has an accent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very fascinating. I mean, there's so many minute things that you can determine, you know, when you look at somebody's handwriting that you can determine how they are and, you know, so many different things. Very, very interesting. I want to thank you for being on the show, Cindy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
I would like to thank my guest for this month's edition of Metaphysically Speaking, Cindy Gray. Very interesting interview. We really ran out of time. I had a lot more questions, but perhaps you can come back some other time and we'll continue this discussion. I definitely want to thank my producer, Brandon McKay, for helping me out. I really do appreciate all this help. And next month, we'll be back on Tuesday, December 21st. Boy, getting close to Christmas already. I can't believe how this year has just flown by, but it has. So, like I said, come back next month, December 21st, and we'll have another edition of Metaphysically Speaking. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you, and have a great day.
Good. Okay. All right. Well. Hi. It's me. It's Jimmy. Your favorite non-resident alien. No, actually, excuse me. Strike that. Non-resident spaceman. Not an alien. At least not to you. Brought to you by the good people at WHFR Dearborn. My name's Jimmy. I'm floating in a tin can. Well. Excuse me. Where to even begin? I don't know. I want to do it, and I feel like doing it, and haven't necessarily done it in a while. I think we can, pay a little tribute to our long-lost patron saint of Lost Spaceman, little David Bowie. Here is, this is Magic Dance off the Labyrinth soundtrack. Enjoy.